Everyone, welcome back to the Marketing Cloudcast, where we bring marketers, thought leaders, and industry experts from around the world together to talk about all the latest trends and tactics that help us all be better marketers. I'm Tina Rizzle, hosting all the way from Sydney, Australia, and joining me again while Megan continues her road trip is the wonderful Connor Wigman. Connor, welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me back, and it's kind of bittersweet because I love being on, but honestly, I'm excited to have Megan back next week. But Tina, the leaves here in Chicago, they're changing. The weather's cooling down. My shorts are turning into sweatpants, and I'm ready to go apple picking. But Sydney, it's a little bit different, right?
Yeah, here in Sydney, it's actually completely opposite the season. Our pants are turning into shorts, and we're in the middle of spring going into summer. Here, our weekends are filled with beautiful coastal walks and beach days. And while it is great to see the seasons change within our parts of the world, we are also now in our third episode of our ABM series. Connor, what did you think of last week's episode?
You know, last week we talked all about data. We heard from our friends at Demandbase who shared the data sources that you can use to drive your ABM strategy. We also heard from Karen Holmgren from Pitney Bowes, who talked about how she put her data to use in ABM campaigns. But since we have this data, now what do we do with it? How do we take action?
Well, luckily in this episode, it's all about account anthropology. Now, for those listening, you're probably wondering, well, what exactly is account anthropology? It's all about understanding the origin and the nature of ABM and what it actually involves. We'll talk about studying the right accounts that you want to target for your ideal customer profile and looking into the different pain points, the deal sizes, and who's actually on the buying committee of those accounts. Now, to help us talk about what makes up ABM anthropology, we have two guests. First, we have our very own Salesforce in resident B2B and ABM expert, Neha Shah, who will share what makes up ABM anthropology and why having an ABM strategy today will help you stay focused, relevant, and aligned during these unprecedented times. Then we have Daniel Egelbredsten, the co-founder and head of client services at Kronos, who spent over a decade building demand generation teams and has won many awards, including the 2019 B2B Innovator of the Year Award. He'll walk us through what building your ABM teams look like, how to choose the right accounts to target, and how to meet the needs of your ideal customer profile.
Wow, so we have a great episode coming up, so we won't keep you waiting any longer. Here is our first interview with Neha.
Hi, everyone. I am Neha. I'm a director of product marketing here for Salesforce Pardot. So primary focus of my role is driving product positioning and solution messaging for Salesforce's B2B marketing offerings. I really focus on understanding our customers and try to drive demand and usage for our products. This includes everything from product positioning, messaging, launching the product, and ensuring our sales teams, as well as our customers, understand it. I've been in B2B marketing space for over 15 years. I started my career in marketing for financial companies, but I got really fascinated with the digital marketing tools that I was using. So post my MBA at Berkeley Haas, I work for a number of digital marketing SaaS companies and really help them accelerate growth.
In the series, we're empowering our listeners to learn more about it and why it's so important. So in your point of view, why is ABM so important today more than ever?
This year, when you talk about today and this year, 2020, it's clearly a year where we are experiencing unprecedented moment, right, in time. One that has been extremely challenging, but at the same time, it's actually reshaping our lives and society in every possible way. And when I think about it, although the most important cost that we are paying this year is the human one, but it's really hard to understate the impact it's having in businesses all over the world, right? It's forcing the entire economy to be rewritten in real time, and we are learning new rules every day. When I think of my own life, like I think of like, who knew that the world would shut down and I'll be like homeschooling my kids, right? And who knew that I would be like so comfortable doing like virtual video visits with my doctors, and that's going to become a norm. when I think of all these changes, these will continue, and the best marketers and the best companies tell stories that are mindful of these changes, right, to their customers. They keep their campaigns relevant to these times. And that's why it's very important to be aligned within your organization to really understand your customer. And ABM enables you to do that, right? ABM enables you to break down the silos between all your customer-facing teams, like marketing, sales, service, to truly understand that customer, to anticipate their needs, and then coordinate that engagement within your organization with empathy. And because it helps you do that, it is more important than ever right now and in today's world, because it really helps you bring the teams together to build that trust, to drive towards your customer success.
Now, there are different ways in how organizations can create different ABM plans. And the focus of this episode is what makes up the ABM anthropology. So in your experience working with different companies across a variety of different verticals, what is ABM anthropology in your point of view?
We're trying to understand the origin and the nature of ABM. And if I apply that to ABM, to me, honestly, it means two things. One is understanding the ICP, or the ideal customer profile, to define your target audience. So understanding which are the type of customers you want to target with your ABM strategy. And then also, like, you want to find accounts or companies that are similar to them, right? So that's the first part. It's like, how do I break it down? How do I understand who's my ideal customer profile? And how do I find more customers like that, or more accounts like that? And second is to drive organizational alignment within ABM, which we talked about earlier, about how to target and nurture those accounts, right? How do I drive organizational alignment to really target and nurture those accounts? And I want to double click and elaborate on both of them. I'll start with the first one. When we think about how do you arrive at the right set of accounts you want to target as part of ABM strategy, you first need to create an ideal customer profile, or as most people would call it, ICP. At a minimum, when you start thinking about ICP, that should include a geographic region, like which accounts, which companies are you targeting? It should target, like, what is the title or level of the person that you're targeting in that account? What is the industry that they belong to? And then you want to add, like, more firmographic data. And what do I mean by firmographic? It's like the company size, right? Like understanding more about the company and the firm. And then as you start thinking about your ICP process, one of the best ways to do that is to look at your best current customers. Right? Like, look at who are your successful current customers, who are the customers that you like the most, and list all the firmographic similarities that you have across those customers. Because that's a good starting point to start thinking about, like, okay, these are my successful customers, and I want to find more like these, right? So list down all the similarities. And then you start off with, like, the data that you have. Like, you look at your own CRM, you look at your marketing automation data, and see if you find other accounts that match that. And believe me, every time I've done this exercise, and everyone that I talk to, it's probably less than what you expect, right? But it gives you a starting point. And the next step is to find, like, the entire addressable market, or the TAM, right? So what you do then is, like, okay, I want to find more customer likes that. And that's what ICP tells you. It tells you, like, who are these, like, the entire total addressable market that you have with these customers. So that's the first part that we talked about. And the second and the most important part is, like, how do you execute this, right? How do you drive organizational alignment to target and nurture those? It's a two-step process if you think about it. First, you want to define your best target accounts. You want to find data on accounts that match that profile. And second, you want to start targeting those accounts one by one. However, the big thing when I think of ABM anthropology is this requires, and this starts with, like, organizational change. Most companies will have to transform their, like, go-to-market models to really expand their ABM programs across their companies. If you don't have support and buy-in from your sales and service organization counterparts, it's not going to be successful, because it is actually a shared responsibility. You want to align your sales and service teams and align, like, okay, these are the criteria that I'm looking for. This is what our successful accounts look like.
Neha shared some important tips on how ABM enables organizations to be able to break down the silos that exist between customer-facing teams, like your marketing team, your sales, and service organizations. By breaking down these silos, we can truly understand the customer and be able to anticipate their needs and coordinate engagement with empathy. Now we're going to hear from Daniel and his learnings on what teams and roles are essential to running a successful ABM strategy.
Sounds like you've worked with a lot of different clients over the years, and you mentioned kind of fine tuning a lot of what they're doing with their programs and helping them. I want to hone in on what we want to talk about in this episode, and we're calling it account anthropology. And really what I mean by that is, what should these marketers be focusing on? How do they understand what accounts to bring in?
A lot of times the account-based approach is presented as kind of next generation or more efficient, or, hey, this is what you need to be doing for the future. Like, it's presented that way. And so a lot of times where a conversation will start with a company that's fairly young and trying to launch their marketing is they want to start in the current generation of marketing, if you will. They don't have a marketing staff in place. Maybe they have one or two salespeople in place. It's mostly been a business development thing to this point. And so that's the scenario in the VC world. And that's a very different, you know, versus on the 100-year-old company, that's where you have your entrenched sales teams with oftentimes the sales team or the sales leadership guides the direction of the company pretty significantly, because that's just where a lot of the unofficial power rests within the company. You know, in some cases, there'll be a few different marketers around, but they'll be playing a more traditional demand gen role. They're showing up because somebody read about ABM, could be the CEO. Like in one case, it was a board member who told the CEO, hey, you need to go look into ABM. And so all of a sudden, the head of marketing is looking into ABM, and that's how it happened, you know. And then they're like, well, I already have these 5 people or 10 people in place, and I already have these systems. What do I actually need to go do?
Yeah. And with those different frameworks, right? So you have the differences. I think we understand that. Maybe we can talk more about, you know, what would those accounts be that they would go after?
I would say the biggest criteria for ABM and the account-based approach comes down to average deal size or average customer value more than it comes down to type of account. And, you know, I get asked a lot of what is that minimum threshold. We actually use math. We go through a fairly extensive calculator exercise using third-party benchmarks as well as our own to try to answer that, depending on the size of the TAM and all that good stuff. There's a whole bunch of criteria. So more often you will find it playing in the larger deal size, 6-figure, 7-figure deal sizes. But that's not a requirement. I think it's misunderstood as a requirement. It just changes the fundamental approach. I'm talking B2B explicitly, like not talking anything B2C. But usually you're running into 90 plus day sales cycles, you know, $5,000-$10,000 deal sizes minimum type of scenarios.
And maybe talk to me more about the calculator here. So you had mentioned a couple of things that are included in those metrics that you calculate. Could you dive in one level deeper there? I think a lot of people would love that.
Once upon a time, many years ago, I ran a demand generation campaign selling to truck stops. And there, at the time, were roughly 11,000 truck stops in North America. So we launched the campaign, traditional tactics to, you know, like paid pay-per-click, traditional email, like the tactics that you would think would be in traditional demand generation. And we're generating all these leads and we're just crushing it. And like maybe month two or three into it, we're generating like 300 leads a month. And then we're like 3 or 4 months into this thing, and we've generated more leads than what there are actual like buyers in the market. The sales cycles are really long. We know they're really long. They're like a year long. So you have no idea if it's going to pan out or not. You're just generating the leads and qualifying them, turning them into sales. And that's kind of one of the natural problems you're facing in B2B. And so it could take you months to realize you have a problem with your leads in the sales cycle. Well, if we had done the research and paid attention to how many truck stops there actually were and how many would actually be in market and fit our ideal customer profile, we would have known that there's no way we could generate more than X leads per month and them actually be real leads. There's no way, because they're not going to be real leads, you know.
So that's a number you would add in your calculation of the number 100%. Of gas stations? Okay.
Yeah. How many are actually out there? So that's where it really starts. It's like, well, how big is your audience really in terms of accounts? And you know, you get the traditional total addressable market, and then you get the serviceable market. So total addressable would be like, you know, if you're selling to grocery stores, all grocery stores, and serviceable would be like, you know, grocery stores belonging to chains of 50 or more stores or whatever, you know, which is a smaller subset.
Something more closer to your wheelhouse, yeah, to your target or ideal customer profile.
Exactly. And so if you want to translate serviceable market to ABM speak, that's really ICP or ideal customer profile. So the calculator really starts with, well, how many accounts are out there that meet my ICP? And, you know, it's not always easy to answer that question. For example, one of the clients we were working with, they said, hey, we want to target fintech companies. How many of them are out there? Well, rough math, we did some research. There's 7,000 fintech companies out there that qualify as fintech. Well, okay, well, what about, you know, these specific subverticals? Let's say there's five of them. You know, I'm not going to get too far into the specifics. Turns out there's about 1,500 of those. All right, well, what about ones that have more than this much revenue? You know, because if they have less than this much revenue, then I don't know. Okay, well, that gets down to about 800. All right. Well, what about ones that have this thing on their website? You know, now we're down to 400. And my thing is like, whether you had 7,000 or 400 is two very different starting places. And how you're going to marshal your resources and execute your campaign and set the targets for that campaign is totally different if there's 7,000 versus 400. Totally different. And neither of them is, quote unquote, the right answer. And so one of the biggest ways to pay back your effort in an ABM campaign is really going through your ICP. And I think where a lot of marketers get hung up is, oh, my ICP has to be perfect. No, it doesn't have to be perfect. It just has to be logical. Like, it has to be logical and it has to be vetted. When I say vetted, not just the marketing department. Get your product team, you know, who's responsible for like understanding the VOC and the voice of the customer and the market segments. Get your sales team, even ask your sales ops people, like get lots of people to look at this and tell you, all right, well, this is what makes an ideal customer profile for these reasons. You need to be logical and you need to vet it, you know, internally. Get your criteria and come up with your first number. And you can always change that later. It doesn't have to be perfect. But you do need one to get started, because when you go back to that calculator, if the very first number, if you think about it like an attrition model where you're pouring some number in the top and some number shake out at the bottom, you know, that's my closed ones. Well, the number you're pouring in the top is your ICP. And everything you're doing from that point forward is geared towards, well, how many accounts are there? So when you tier the accounts, or when you buy data for understanding those accounts, or when you staff BDRs to go engage those accounts, it's very different if you have 7,000 accounts versus if you have 400. So you really have to start by understanding that to even be able to set metrics for the rest of the campaign. And then once you're getting in front of the audience, well, are they engaging or not? And if you've got the right kind of analytics or technology, are they engaging back when you're engaging them? You know, well, what percentage of that audience? And then as you kind of pull those down through to marketing qualified, to sales qualified, to deals in the funnel, there's different levers you might pull and different tactics you might play depending on the rate at which they're pulling through and how many of them there are.
Okay. Yeah. Another thing I want to kind of pick your brain on is these things called buying committees. Could you share more about what are these buying committees and what do they generally look like?
So I'm going to take hospitals as an example and selling medical equipment into hospitals. Well, the hospital is not just going to buy anybody's medical equipment. Somebody has to okay the vendor. Somebody has to okay the product. There's so many different people involved in, hey, is this actually a good idea for our business? And that plays out in so many different places, you know, but generally speaking, there's somebody at the hospital or at the target account who has the pain that you are trying to solve with your product. Somebody has that pain. And maybe there's more than one person, but there's somebody with the pain and the impetus to actually solve the problem, whatever that is, that your product solves. And that's your hero or your champion or your starting place or whatever you want to think about. And like, particularly when you get into larger deal sizes or more complicated deals, but in general, the political, like internal political strife that your hero is going to run into, or just the headache that they have to deal with to find a new vendor and source a new product and do something different, or even just solve the problem, that is more complicated the larger the group of people that are brought along in this journey. But particularly with larger deal sizes, people don't they don't want to put their name on, hey, yeah, I agree, we should go buy this $1 million product. They don't want to put their name on that by themselves. There's a lot of risk on that. It really, on almost anything that a B2B person is going to go through a journey buying, generally speaking, unless it's something they're real sure about. But the point is that you might have the champion or the hero totally sold, but there are other people that they got to enfranchise in the process. And they're, number one, distracted because they have other things going on. And number two, they're only going to put so much of their effort into pushing this deal along because it's not as important to them as it is to you, as the marketer.
So what do you think are the biggest developments that are needed in the future of ABM, let's say the next 3 to 5 years?
I think what marketers really need to understand about account-based and about marketing in general, not to be preaching, ABM is not a technology play. ABM is a critical thinking exercise. If your marketing team is sitting down on a recurring basis and talking to the sales team about, hey, what should we be doing and why should we be doing it, you have started your ABM journey. And in many ways, you are just trying to facilitate like the collaboration internally, the conversations that need to be had about who should I be targeting, why should I be targeting them, what should I be saying to them. And that is not a technology play. That is a process or a fundamental like approach. And your business needs to be bought in on that at the highest level, or people won't take it seriously. You know, the salesperson won't show up to the call, or the marketer will just steamroll the salesperson, or whatever the case. Even in the best organizations who do this well, it is hard to maintain the collaboration without top-down buy-in. I'm not saying it can't be done, but top-down is important. And if you're an executive at a business who's trying to think about orchestrating marketing for the future, by far the most important thing to be thinking about is, how do I facilitate the collaboration, and how do I like lock in the collaboration organizationally to be thinking about who should I be targeting, why should I be targeting. And then from there, it is very much a technology play, because the technology is what helps you scale that in a cost-effective, or really in a realistic way. You know, it's not possible without technology at scale, but technology is not where you should start. So I think that's an important place to leave it.
All right, so we know what ABM is, we know what data we need, we know which accounts to target, and we know who is on our accounts buying committee. We're all set to go. I'm ready to launch tomorrow.
I wish. We are almost there, Connor. It was so great to hear from Neha and how she shared the importance of having an ABM strategy and how it helps us all stay aligned and focused. And Daniel touched on the structures of ABM teams and what that looks like. So next week, we'll build on everything and share the recipe behind the secret sauce of ABM.
Okay, so I'll put my ABM strategy on hold until we can finish exchanging recipes. Thank you to Neha Shah and Daniel Engelbretson for taking the time to join us on this episode and share their vast B2B marketing knowledge. Tune in next week as Megan returns from her trip. Again, bittersweet, but I'm excited for her to be back. Thank you again to Think Ahead Studios for editing the episode, audible.com for the music, and of course, Press Maxon for the jingle. See you next week.
Bye, guys.